In a week where we managed to see yet another 50-point outing, the end of a consecutive double-digit scoring streak, while another shows little to any sign of slowing down on the march toward what appears to be yet another championship, the time has come for us to reconvene and talk on such topics and more around the league as we sit just 15 days away from Christmas. What's going on, everyone, and welcome to the new 24, the James Worthy, Kevin Love, Al Horford, and Jerry Stackhouse episode, as this marks number 42. For all keeping tally wherever you're listening to us from during this festive season, as we appreciate your support, I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and as always, I'm back beside my friend and co-host, Torrence Stagger, to talk on all the things pertaining to the NBA. What's happening, man?
Hey, man, things are great. Episode 42, 42, very interesting number. Reminds me of Jackie Robinson. Very interesting figure in history and in life, you know, because sometimes things that may seem bright may actually be dark, and things that may be dark may actually be light. I think it's a few of those situations we're going to discuss this episode. So check it out. Enjoy it. You want to talk to us at tntfpod@gmail.com. Or TNTF underscore on Instagram and X.
And let's not waste your time here on the new 24 and get into discussing a player who was the subject of a ton of trade talks across the NBA Twitterverse prior to making his season debut about a month back after recovering from surgery on the pinky finger of his shooting hand, but has shown those around Bayer County exactly why the San Antonio Spurs decided to pay him $229 million over the next four seasons over the summer. And that's De'Aaron Fox, the all-star point guard who, in the absence of Victor Wembanyama and reigning Rookie of the Year Stephon Castle, has done his part and some to keep the Spurs in the thick of the West playoff picture as the team sits fifth overall as we record with a 16-7 record as a Kentucky product entered the week averaging 25 points and 7 assists per game while shooting 49% from the floor, all the while guiding San Antonio to wins in 7 out of their last 10 outings going into their NBA Cup quarterfinal showdown with the Los Angeles Lakers on Wednesday evening. De'Aaron Fox right now is doing everything that I thought he needed to do and more when talking about the Spurs and our 30 teams and 24 days series that you could check out across our platforms wherever you subscribe to listen to your favorite podcast. And that's picking and choosing his spots on when and where to attack defenses. Just watching him closely in the first and third quarter, you see him spreading the wealth around, looking to get his guys going, such as the Champagnes of the world, the Luke Cornets, the Devin Vassell, and they're feasting off of that. And then when it's the second and especially the fourth quarter, he's become their go-to player down the stretch with the money on the line. And the thing that I like about it is that head coach Mitch Johnson and his coaching staff, in the absence of Wemby and Castle, have done an excellent job of surrounding De'Aaron Fox around a trio of shooters beside a big man that can stretch the floor and Luke Cornet, who prior to him going down with injury and missing the last couple of outings, has really played an impressive stretch of basketball in Wemby's absence. But I think that's what's all led to it. And he's also hitting three-point shots at a nice rate. I believe he's shooting around 39%, taking close to 7 three-point attempts per game. And San Antonio's offense has never looked better. They boast a 119.3 offensive rating with Fox without Castle and Wembanyama, which if you were to rank that entering the week, it would be the sixth best offense in all of the NBA. So if you put De'Aaron Fox next to three shooters in a row, man, it's kind of like converting cash, and they've done just that. You see Harrison Barnes even playing well. So I've been impressed with what I've seen, and De'Aaron Fox has definitely been the head of the snake out in Alamo.
This is what Swiper Fox asked for. You left basketball hell in Sacramento and you came to the best of the best in San Antonio. When we speak about an organization that's known to find and develop role players, young players, De'Aaron Fox is somebody who's in the prime of his career. Statistically, he's been one of the best players of his era and just never got that opportunity. He's taking full advantage of it right now. When you speak of Castle and Wemby being down, arguably the two best players on this team outside of Fox himself, and for them to still be winning, just a testament to his own individual greatness.
Yeah, and kudos to Devin Vassell as well. He's been putting together some impressive performances, shooting the lights out. I believe he had a 30-plus point performance last week as well. If they could get Wembanyama back for this Cup quarterfinal showdown that they got with the Lakers, could be a big deal for a team that is trying to make some noise and put the league on notice prior to that big time Christmas Day showdown with the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that we talked about last week.
Yeah, but see, the last game prior to this, I think Vassell had 5 points. He's an interesting case because I'm
I
always
know.
expecting more from him. But at the same time, you're talking about Wemby has to get the ball, of course. De'Aaron Fox has to get the ball. Stephon Castle has to get the ball. And Dylan Harper, who's been playing good basketball now that he's back, he has to have the basketball. You kind of want Vassell to be that main go-to option on the perimeter on the wing, but then when you think of everybody that's in front of him and he's still averaging 15 a game, it is impressive, but can't hide a 5-point game though. Like, we really need him to be over the top consistent. And Harrison Barnes shooting 43% from three, 49 from the field. Consummate professional. Another team, another situation, and he just filling his role. He used to get criticized for being this exact guy during his younger years in the league, but being this exact guy is the reason he's gonna have a long career. He finds his role, he plays it, he maximizes it, and he shows up. Doesn't miss many games.
Yeah, San Antonio has a plethora of weapons. And you write about Devin Vassell. I noticed that where he opened up the week with a 5-point dud against the New Orleans Pelicans. That's definitely something that's always been the story with him. And he's a guy that I've been high on, but even I can admit that he has his ups and downs. And I think that's one of the reasons why you hear his name constantly brought up in a lot of trade chatter because of those up and down performances and combined with the amount of talent that they have. Because maybe being in a situation in his future where he is one of the main three guys could be what he needs to truly put his career on a trajectory that a lot of people thought it would be on when he came out of Florida State about 5 years ago.
Would you say a place like maybe Milwaukee could be a good spot for him?
Yeah,
Because
I think it would be a
he
great
kind of
spot.
reminds you of somebody that used to play there too, in a way.
Yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
they got a chance to do something very interesting if they really were to think this all the way through, I would say.
Remember that consecutive double-digit scoring streak we spoke on leading into the top part of this week's episode? Well, this past week, something happened that many Hoops fans had not seen since January 6, 2007, which is LeBron James being held to single digits in a regular season outing is his record-best streak of 1,297 games where he managed to score at least 10 points or more in every outing. Has officially come to a close. A moment that occurred prior to the start of last weekend against the Toronto Raptors, as the NBA's all-time leading scorer finished the night with only 8 points. However, the man known as King James wouldn't be denied the victory, as he opted to drive to the rim, not to preserve his streak, but kick it out to his teammate, Rui Hachimura, for a corner tray that he'd hit as the final buzzer sounded to guide the Lakers to a 3-point win behind enemy lines. I had a feeling this day was coming. Because it was a lot of games over the last couple of years where LeBron was getting close, but he would always find a way to push through. He'd get that 10, he'd get that 12, but you could tell early in the night watching that game, which was one of my games to watch that I highlighted at the conclusion of last week's episode. You could tell early on that he didn't have his legs underneath him and that it was going to be a plight for him to try and get to those 10 points. But he had shots and opportunities. He missed a few chippies too, but in true LeBron fashion, always makes the right play. And that's why a lot of the chatter surrounding LeBron over these last couple of months has been crazy to me. Not surprising, but just crazy because people try to make it seem as though he's this selfish player and he's this guy that plays to pad his stats in an effort to enhance his legacy when his legacy is already cemented. And when it's all said and done, he's gonna be among the greats of the greats in this game. And I know it may be hard for some people to comprehend the fact that people are having these conversations while he's still playing, but these conversations are gonna continue to happen even when he's done playing. I just thought it was kind of fitting for it to end the way that it did. And only with LeBron could it ever be that climactic of an ending.
Look, I'm somebody that followed his career a lot. I'm not gonna even use the F word to describe myself right now. But all of those things that you tried to defend him on, Bron being a selfish player, oh, he definitely a selfish player. Does he stat pad? He definitely stat pads. But it's all in the effort to win, weirdly enough. He knows that winning has to be a part of said formula at the end of the day, but he gonna try to make it look good too. We even seen him do it in a couple of L's he took. Made sure them numbers look good. And you can't knock them because stats are only recorded history of what actually took place. Now, to this record, I don't care about this record. I'm gonna just be honest. This is one of those ESPN LeBron stats as people have like termed it over the years. It was never a stat until he came into the game, and now it's a stat. Is it impressive? Of course, especially when they show that like the next person that's close, it'll take them 15 years to get to this point, and they not playing another 15 years, so they say at this time. The play at the end of the game, that was cool. Bron been making that play for 22, 23 years now. People judge that same play the same way that they've always judged it. Should he have shot it? Was he trying to put the blame on somebody else? Did he just want to prove his basketball genius? At this point, you got your answer before any of the events take place with him. Now, what it does highlight for me, somebody who watches the Lakers a lot, I think Bron definitely trying to prove a point to whether it's the media, JJ Redick, the front office, the next team he may or may not play for, that this Luka ball, aka James Harden ball, is not sustainable. It doesn't lead to a lot of good shots for a lot of other players on the floor, and ultimately is not gonna lead to winning. Because what, his first game back, what, he had like 11 assists? If one thing LeBron been doing since he came back, he been moving the hell out that ball. And it's a lot different than when Luka in the game, which is funny because LeBron got accused of the same thing. He wanted his assist. You got to sit in the corner and you can't dribble it. Don't pass it to nobody else. He passed it to you for you to shoot it. But, I mean, he at least give you time on the shot clock. This Lakers offense, though, is statistically successful. Schematically, it's going to get feasted on by teams like OKC, even I would say a healthy Dallas team.
And the Lakers have a lot of stretches as well when Luka is on the floor beside Austin Reeves and there's no LeBron there, where that offense gets stagnant. And those two like to play your turn, my turn level basketball. We saw that the following outing that they had against the Philadelphia 76ers, where they had a big lead and you saw the Sixers start to chip away because that offense got complacent and LeBron had to come in there and rip off 10 in a row. And he put up 29 that night. I think he was well aware of the fact that he had failed to finish in double digits the previous game, and he wanted to make a mark that next night and get close to a 30-point performance, which he did. I believe he finished the night with 29, 8-6. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he definitely put up a much better line. He seemed to have his legs, and you saw him milking in the celebration that he likes to do when he hits a big shot on the road to silence the crowd, known as the silencer, putting the king crown above his head. I know some people like to say he's a selfish player and yeah, that he's stat pads. We know LeBron plays to the crowd. I'm not going to dispute that one. However, if someone knows that they have a 30-point game on the line, I've never seen a player try and shy away from getting it. Same with 40 and 50 and all those other ones. The one thing that I find amazing about this streak is that he managed to keep it up for over 18 years. And to put it in perspective for how long of a streak this was and how long it lasted, the president of the United States was George Bush. The T-Mobile sidekick was still in style. And hell, I wasn't even in high school yet. So it just goes to show you how long it's lasted. And some people who were fans of LeBron weren't even born yet. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, but see, this is what I'm saying. You ain't got to defend the stat pattern and him being selfish. This is just what it is. Bro, selfish, and he stat pads. And guess what? They give Mike credit for being selfish and stat padding. They gave Kobe credit for being selfish and stat padding. It's a part of the GOAT DNA. It's just a select few that fit the criteria, got the personality traits. It just is what it is, man. How many times Mike told somebody, I'm getting 40 tonight, I'm getting 50? That's stat padding. Kobe, come on now. You ain't got to defend it, bro. So some things may sound like a diss, and it might be a beautiful truth.
Remember, Mike told us when he got those 50-point games that he didn't have a choice, and sometimes he just had to do
Yeah, whatever the
it.
story got to be. You know what I'm saying? It's going to sound good at the card table that night. You know, so.
They say records are meant to be broken, and while one that was set just came to an end, there is the possibility that another scoring record could be on the verge of being broken soon, courtesy of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who surpassed Wilt Chamberlain last week for the second longest streak of all time with at least 20 points or more, as SGA has scored 20 or more in 95 consecutive games and counting as of this recording, and stands 32 games away from surpassing the Hall of Fame giant that holds the record for the longest run of 20-plus point performances, as Wilt hit the mark in 126 straight games, as you'd have to go all the way back to October 30th, 2024, to uncover the last time the reigning MVP and SGA failed to score less than 20 points in a single contest, in which he scored 18 against the San Antonio Spurs that night. It's significant from this standpoint. Anytime you have a legitimate shot to get one of Wilt Chamberlain's records, a record that is 62 years old, might I add, is something that deserves to be talked about a little bit. I understand that it's not the ultimate record. I understand it's not the record that makes him the NBA's all-time leading scorer. However, I do think that this is a record that SGA is more than capable of getting.
Wait, hold on. You're talking about Wilt Chamberlain, right?
Yes, the man that owns pretty much damn near a
The
ton of
NBA
records. Yeah, I
definitely got
know.
a lot of records. A lot of
I know.
a lot of
Changed the way the
legendary
game was
records.
played. A lot of rules.
Definitely did change the way the game was played, and I'm sure it changed some of the rules. No kids out here.
I'm gonna tell you why it's a big. I'm gonna tell you why it's a big deal. When James Harden had the 30-point game streak, 32 straight games, right? I never looked at that record one point in time and said, oh, James is breaking that. Because I believe he holds the record for most consecutive 30-point games with 65. No one's touching that. But the fact that Shai has a legit shot to break that record for most consecutive 20-point games, when you think about the way that he's putting up buckets left and right out here, and he's always among the top two or three in scoring, this is reigning NBA scoring champion, I don't think it's anybody in his way. And I think he definitely has a legit chance.
Shout out to my Leo brother on Wilt Chamberlain, a historical liar, whether it's 100 points or 20,000 points, however you tally up your scores.
I know why you said that number, but proceed.
Well, of course you do. Anyway, this record was like the LeBron record. I don't care about this one either. Don't get me wrong. It's hard to score 20 points in the NBA. You look at guys that came into the league averaging 20 their rookie year. It's a Hall of Fame class of people. When it come to SGA, I don't care about the 20 points. This season, I've been checking how many nights he ain't get 30, and that's only been four times this season. So if they got an ESPN stat for that, or James Harden, Wilt Chamberlain record, that's what Gabe has a whole notebook of those. Yeah, unless it's one of those stats, then, who cares, man? But shout out to him for playing great.
As someone that likes to keep up with history, I can own up to that and admit that I like to keep a record book myself. Records are made to be broken. And that's the beauty of sports. And that record is as old as my parents. And I want to see the record broken. I'm just going to keep it real for that reason.
So Wilt, the only person in front of Shai?
Yeah, for most consecutive 20-point games in NBA history.
Oh, well, then Shai got the record, man. I told you the NBA started when Magic and Bird showed up. Like, that's like BC and AD. That's how we got to talk about this stuff. So, yeah, Shai got the record. Shout out to SGA, the Canadian answer. Yeah, we can
I
move
get what
on.
You said, but Wilt, but on, Wilt, one of them guys you can't deny.
Nah,
you just can't. Like
can't,
you say,
nah,
he owns the record book.
I just did it.
I can't let you do that one.
I'm not going to knock the Old Testament, but the New Testament count too now. That's all I'm saying. Shai got the record. Shout out to Wilt Chamberlain. Legend in two sports. Three sports, actually. Nah, four. One of the all-time great athletes. But, that was before we had HD TVs and Air Maxes. So
HD TV before VHS tapes. Shit.
Before color was on TV, probably.
Right.
Before the 808 drum machine was made. So,
I know.
Shai got the record, man. Shout out to SGA.
But speaking of consecutive games with at least 20 points or more in records, there's a man who is well on pace to break the record for the highest scoring average ever by an undrafted player in the NBA this season, and Austin Reaves of the Los Angeles Lakers, who entered the week sitting seventh in scoring right now, averaging a career best 28.4 points, to go besides 7 dimes per game in his fifth year out of Oklahoma, all the while shooting 51% from the floor. His AR-15 is averaging 40 points, 10 assists, and 5 rebounds per game through the 5 games he's played without his all-star running mate Luka Doncic by his side, as the man who dropped a career-high 51 on the Kings without Luka and LeBron in the early days of the regular season, went off of 44 points last week in the Lakers' win over the Raptors, a game where Luka was out due to the birth of his second child. Austin Reeves right now, he playing his way out of LA. I think he becoming too expensive for the Lakers. This dude is getting to it from all three levels of the floor, and his footwork and his balance was on full display against Toronto, driving to the rim, hitting a lot of one-legged shots, knocking down trays all the way from Saskatchewan, it seemed like. Like he took a shot where the defense didn't press up on him from way beyond three-point land and knocked it down. And he's playing with a high degree of confidence. This was a time where when he came into the league, you knew he was a work in progress from three-point land. That's not the case these days. He's a guy that you have to account for from behind the arc. And he was even hitting some difficult shots with tight contests, such as the and one that he knocked down against Kyler Murray-Boyles en route to a three-point play. He's looking like an all-star right now. And that's insane to think about. I know Moses Malone technically is the guy that has the highest scoring average by an undrafted player in NBA history, but we all know that Moses Malone was drafted in the ABA. So Austin looks like he's really like the undrafted king right now with the way that he's been playing out in Tinseltown.
Yeah, y'all focusing on the wrong list. Yeah, all-star, max contract. Yeah, get it all. He gonna do it all. The 28 a game, we'll see how long that lasts with Brian back. And he hit crazy shots every night. Like, he ain't gonna just keep hitting all them shots. But back to the real list. Hey, Dan Majerle, Chris Mullin, greatest white boy at shooting guard. I mean, Austin Reaves, that's what he coming for right there. That's the real list. We know Larry Joe got that number three. We probably gotta get Steve Kerr. He the guy at the one. Kevin McHale, greatest white power forward of all time, they said. And you know, we'll figure out center later. But Austin Reaves, though, great, great. The Lakers needed somebody to step up, be another go-to scorer, somebody that give LeBron and Luka an opportunity to play one-on-one, and he's taking full advantage of it. Now, this is working out perfectly for him. I don't know if this is a part of the Lakers' master plan. You know, to eventually sign and trade Austin Reaves, you know, maybe to Milwaukee, Wisconsin this offseason. But this team would be a lot better served with him coming off the bench, of course. That's where this team really needs him at because they have the worst bench in the NBA right now. He wants to play like a number one option anyway. The minutes need to be staggered. It's all type of things that need to happen. But kudos to the Lakers. This has been a masterful plan. I don't know how long this guy will be in the Lakers uniform. I don't even know if it's a money issue because they got new ownership coming in, spending a lot of money. I just seen they picked up some closer from the Mets today on the Dodgers. So
Edwin Diaz.
the money thing is no longer an issue with the purple and gold. So it's really not coming down to that. And one last thing, you know, LeBron been there Austin Reaves' whole career. Now, I just find it funny, you know, they try to speak on influencing the game and helping guys develop and who put that dog in who and gave somebody that confidence, gave them that rope. I mean, I don't know if Austin Reaves become this player without number 23 or number six. Just something to think about. Why y'all keep reminiscing on Mike punching Steve Kerr in the face every year?
Yeah, Austin Reaves definitely is a guy that was a huge beneficiary of LeBron James placing trust in him and confidence in him. And I think we understand then why LeBron was so high on him after seeing him shine during his rookie year in limited minutes. I understand the case that you make for him potentially being the first man off the bench in a six-man role, but with the way he is playing right now, good luck convincing him of that. And there was a team in the Detroit Pistons that tried to draft him, told him that they were interested in drafting him, right? And him and his camp said, no, we'll opt to take a path elsewhere. And if we end up undrafted, that's what will happen. It's paid off for him. I wonder, will they spin the block and seek to inquire about him? Should he hit the market as a free agent? Just putting that out there. Milwaukee, Wisconsin isn't the only place in the Midwest that could use a guy with the services and skill set of an
Bring you can
Austin
bring
Reaves.
y'all can bring them here. You know, we got Giddy, we got Bouzelas. I mean, we see what y'all trying to do. Kevin Herter, like you might as well go get Austin Reed. I'm telling you, this white Mike if he come here.
And then you talk about centers. I can't think of a white center, but maybe you put Tom Chambers at the five. He had some
Bill
great, he had a
Winnington.
great straight.
I'm gonna put Bill Winnington just cause off the strength. Like, if you're gonna put Bill there.
don't know, man. Tom Chambers caught some bodies at his day, but I get it. I get the Chicago love for Bill Winnington. Shout out to him. And then there's the soon to be 19-year-old rookie later this month who just recently joined LeBron James as the only players in league history to score 30 plus points in a game is 18-year-olds. And that's Mavericks rookie Cooper Flagg, who entered the week averaging 20.3 points and 5.3 rebounds per outing through his first four games in the month of December out in Dallas. And following the return of Anthony Davis, has helped to guide the Mavs to wins in four out of their last five outings, defeating the Nuggets, Heat, and Rockets in that time span, as Dallas sits just a half game behind Portland for the 10th and final play-in spot in the Western Conference. Cooper Flagg right now, man, has found his rhythm as a secondary creator and a scorer. And now that Dallas is playing one to two guards beside him that could bring up the ball and take a little bit of pressure off of him having to initiate everything, which I thought was a great test in the early going that Jason Kidd provided him with. He's in a position more often than not to catch and either make plays as a driver, as a shooter, or as a passer. Rarely are we seeing him have to pull the ball back out, reorganize, and try and find his way out of nothing. And I think that's helped him a ton in terms of inside the arc scoring within a restricted area, as a lot of the driving lanes are much cleaner. And now he's only having to beat one guy off the dribbling route to the rim. And when the double comes his way, he's able to make the next read. He kicked the ball back out. We know defensively he covers an immense amount of ground. He hasn't really struggled there. And he's been willing to take most of the matchups. Now, of course, there's some quicker guards that could give him some problems at times. But for the most part, he's done well as a help side defender and as a rebounder. But he's cemented himself atop of the Rookie of the Year race alongside of Con Knipl and Cedric Coward. And they're winning games. And this is why I kept saying last week we were talking about Anthony Davis in our Trading Places segment. Well, I wouldn't be so quick to trade away Anthony Davis on the Dallas Mavericks, especially with that defense competing the way that they are, and Kyrie Irving has yet to return. Might want to see what you have. It's not all that bad out there in Dallas. Ryan Nembhard, the brother of Andrew Nembhard, has been playing some impressive basketball as well on that two-way deal. Might want to convert him to a standard contract.
And Kevin McHale, you in trouble, buddy. Cooper Flagg, that was the other forward I was looking for. Come on now. You know Cooper Flagg, future two-time NBA champion, future MVP. You know, not gonna have you outdo Larry Bird, but you on your way, boy. Like you said, he found his rhythm. I'm gonna go back to the two games in LA, the 11 assists against the Lakers, the 35 the next night against the Clippers, and the next four games. Mavericks go 3-1, playing the Denver Nuggets, the Miami Heat, OKC, and the Houston Rockets. Now, whether guys are out or not, these are still playoff teams. These are still the top teams in the Western Conference. And he played great in those games. You talk about confidence builders. I think you can definitely see him seeing that, hey, I can be one of the best guys in this league. And he's the youngest guy in this league, and he's putting up the numbers he's putting up. As you said, you keep Anthony Davis because Kyrie Irving is still set to return. You still have an opportunity to get into that play-in picture. You definitely don't want to get the eighth seed, but get in that play-in picture and maybe, you know, we can start talking about moving up towards that seventh seed. There's still a lot of games to be played right now. We still got like 50 plus games to be played. So I like what I'm seeing from Cooper Flagg, definitely. I don't know if he's number one as far as rookie of the year right now. I think we still need more time, maybe like January or so, before we can get into those discussions, but he's making his case.
I'm just enjoying the fact that for the first time in a long time, we got a three-man race for Rookie of the Year that's brewing. And I like the performances that I've seen from Cooper Flagg, Con Knipl, and Cedric Coward, who is coming off of a great outing himself this past week against the Clippers. Talked about how he reached out directly to Kawhi Leonard and was saying he would love to train with him at some point. And he was saying, hey, I know he don't have social media, but I just felt like that was a perfect time for me to just shoot my shot and let him know that I'd be interested. And that's a guy that he's been compared to by some people that are draft experts. It's just been cool to watch their growth and overall development as they try and ascend in the league. And Con Kniepel and Cooper Flagg recently made history as the first pair of teammates to ever win Rookie of the Month. You know, both of them happened to play and star together in their long year in Duke and guided the Blue Devils to a Final Four appearance before falling short against Houston in the national semifinal last year.
First of all, let's not disrespect Derrick Queen and exclude him out of this three-man race, as you just called it.
No, I'm
We're
not doing
talking
that.
about first rookie with a 30-point triple-double.
He was, yeah. Kudos to
Nah,
him.
but you called it a three-man race. Let's not do that. That's why I said let's wait to January before we start making those type of statements. I mention all the time on this show. I don't watch a lot of college basketball. I didn't know that Con Kniepel and Cooper Flagg were both at Duke. I really didn't know. So y'all telling me y'all had both of them white guys there and it wasn't no real hate? I'm from the J.J. Redick, Tyler Hansbrough era of college basketball. Y'all had both them boys there and wasn't no real hate? Y'all ain't watching sports right, man. Put them parlays down, man. Tune into the game.
I'm not counting Derrick Queen out. I know that the Rookie of the Year race is not fully cemented, but as of right now, those are the guys in my top three. I know Derrick Queen is coming. I'm glad that you shouted him out. He definitely deserves that. He's a guy that we talked about a couple weeks ago as a guy that could easily insert himself in that Rookie of the Year conversation. Lord knows, I wish it was a certain team that resides in our city that took him on draft night. So I have nothing but respect for Derrick Queen, and hopefully the best is yet to come for him because if he continues to play at the level that he is, he can easily be in that conversation. No doubt about it. Jeremiah Fears, a guy that's a local product out of Joliet. Brother Jeremy plays for Michigan State. Got another younger brother coming up in the prep ranks right now. He's holding it down as well.
Yeah, man, wouldn't it have been great for the Bulls to pick any of these guys? Like, even just been in position to pick any of these guys? Just any one of them.
Just a moment ago, you heard us talking about the stellar season that Austin Reaves is having out in Tinseltown. Meanwhile, there's a player who he just crossed paths with at the top of this week, who is one of only four players in the league that's currently averaging 30 points or more per game. And that's Sixers guard Tyrese Maxey, who, in spite of ranking among the middle of the pack in offensive and defensive rating, has Philadelphia just 3 games back of New York for the second seed in the East as we record this right now, as the All-Star has scored at least 35 points or more in 3 out of his last 5 games, all the while averaging a career best 7.2 dimes per game as well, playing in every game to date for a squad that's needed him to do so, alongside the likes of his supporting castmates such as Kelly Oubre Jr., Quentin Grimes, and rookie backcourt mate VJ Edgecombe. Tyrese Maxey is looking like a guy that has all the capability to be on an all-NBA team this year. Talked about how Austin Reaves is getting to it on all three levels of the floor. Tyrese Maxey is no different. And the pace in which he plays it on a night-to-night basis makes him a tough cover. And I give Tyrese Maxey a lot of credit. It's not too many guys of his age with his experience in the league that has been openly willing to take a leadership role. And while some of that has come due to the unfortunate injuries and setbacks that Joel Embiid has had, as well as Paul George, we see him starting to cement himself as the leader out in Philadelphia. And it's getting to the point where if those guys and Paul George and Joel Embiid want to be a part of this thing, they're going to have to fall in line and follow him and let him take them to that promised land that they aspire to go. Hopefully those guys can get healthy and potentially put themselves in position to get a top four seed in the East and let the chips fall where they lay in a conference that's wide open, even with the red hot Detroit Pistons still being in that number one overall seed right now.
Shout out to Doc Rivers. He had SGA. He called it early. He didn't say save MVP, but he definitely let it be known that he had a star player on his hands. And when he got to Philadelphia, the same thing with Tyrese Maxey. Joel Embiid has publicly called Tyrese Maxey the face of this franchise at this point. And then the Eastern Conference that has Cade Cunningham, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Halliburton, Trae Young, and so on and so forth. It's arguable that he's the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. He's been playing at this level consistently for a few seasons now. Like, this is not really a new thing. When he's had the opportunity, even when James Harden was there, when he had the opportunity, he took advantage of it and had 30 and 35 point games and still got the assist to go along with it. At this point, it's about just moving forward. I'm not sure the market for Joel, but If I'm them at the deadline, I'm definitely trying to see what I can get for Paul George, possibly, to just add to this. You mentioned Quentin Grimes, VJ, Jared McCain. You got a nice core of young guys there, surprisingly enough, under a Daryl Morey leadership. Just continue to add to it. He's the main ingredient right now. You can't really say that Joel and Paul have really contributed to the overall record of this team in a significant way this season. I mean, why not just stamp it?
No, I agree with you, and I say that as one of Joel Embiid's biggest supporters. This has definitely been Tyrese Maxey's doing, and Joel Embiid is nights where, when he is available, he's had some good outings, but there's also been some nights where he just doesn't look like his former MVP self. You can tell that the lateral movement is not what it once was during the prime years of his career. And you don't know some nights what you're going to be able to get. And hopefully he could get himself back healthy to be that supporting cast mate that Tyrese Maxey needs, as well as Quentin Grimes and VJ Edgecombe and the rest of their supporting cast out in Philadelphia. I think that not all is lost. And that's why sometimes you can't always be so quick to assess things and look at things as truly bleak. Because Tyrese Maxey, in my opinion, outside of Anthony Edwards, is the best guard out of that 2020 NBA draft class. And that's even in spite of Tyrese Haliburton guiding the Pacers to the NBA Finals a season ago. I've always felt that way. And he always was the guy that was the more intriguing player to me when comparing him to Tyrese Haliburton. So I'm enjoying what I've seen. I know guys like James Harden played a role in helping and mentoring him. And to see that paying off, it's been a full circle moment. I know a lot of the veterans around the league have spoken highly of him, and I'm pretty sure that means a lot to him. Been a great year for DFW products in the league, such as Tyrese Maxey, Cade Cunningham, and Julius Randle, who have gotten off to some fantastic starts and could potentially all be in an all-star game out in Los Angeles beside one another.
And once again, I know he wasn't the number one pick, of course, but you look at Tyrese Maxey's situation throughout the duration of his career, it's why we're advocating for Dallas to keep Kyrie and Anthony Davis around Cooper Flagg, especially they're there for what, half of his rookie deal. Give him time to get those reps, that opportunity to play in some meaningful games, learn how to play within a role. Especially if you're looking at somebody being a playmaker on your team. Best way to understand roles is to actually be in one yourself. And then that way you expand outward and to understand everybody's role on the floor. And you see the maturation in Tyrese's game this year. I don't know if VJ Edgecombe comes out and plays that well without a Tyrese Maxey understanding being in that same situation.
So we've touched on the stellar play of Tyrese Maxey. Well, how about another guard who came up under the Hall of Fame head coach John Calipari during his days at Kentucky and Denver's Jamal Murray, the Nuggets guard who is currently averaging a career best 25 points, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds per game on a near 50-40-90 shooting line from the field, and recently won Western Conference Player of the Week honors for his performance last week, marking the first time that Murray has won the award, as he poured in a season-high 52 points in a 15-point road win against the Pacers on 19 for 25 shooting from the floor, where he managed to shoot 10 for 11 from downtown, making the 25-26 Nuggets just the third team in league history to ever feature three different players with 50-point games in the same season, as Murray joined his running mates Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon with his most recent 50-point night. I remember in 30 teams in 24 days, we talked about Jamal Murray and what he has to do in order to potentially become an all-star. I said on there that I think he's the best player in the league not to be named to an all-star team. You talked about how it was going to be an uphill battle for him to get there, and that he was kind of like Mike Conley in the early 2010s in the Western Conference. The only difference is Jamal Murray has a ring to show for his performances. I think this is the year. And you know why? Because for the first time in his career, he's gotten off to a strong start. Denver is at the top of the Western Conference standings. They sit third overall. And the one thing that he's doing right now is taking a ton of pressure off of Nikola Jokic. So many times at the start of the year through the first quarter of the year, we've seen Nikola Jokic have to carry a mighty load. That hasn't been the case as much with Jamal Murray in the mix. And I always believe that with MPJ being out the picture and Aaron Gordon now being down due to injury for an indefinite period of time, that this was going to have to be the season in which the Denver Nuggets got the best out of Jamal Murray. And they've done that. And in some respects, he's kind of bought Cam Johnson some time to get his stuff sorted out and together with the way that he's playing. And when you look at this new all-star format, it benefits players like Jamal Murray, man. So I think his performance has been significant, and they couldn't stop him the other night. Indiana scored inside, outside, got to the line. He's playing with a level of confidence. And for a guy that was a questionable decision going into that game, could have fooled me.
Jamal Murray's the Klay Thompson of this Denver Nuggets run. When he was hurt, they didn't get close to winning. And when he came back, they finally won a championship. He's the guy that hit all the big shots. He's the guy that dueled with Donovan Mitchell in the bubble. He's the guy that hit the game winner over Anthony Davis. You got a guy like Jamal Murray, no matter who the opposing point guard is, whether it's Steph, whether it's Shai, whether it's De'Aaron Fox, Anthony Edwards, it doesn't matter. He feels like on a night-to-night basis, he can compete with any one of them, and he's proven it time and time again. Now, to making the All-Star thing is still in question. Like, Shai, Steph, depending on where they put Luka at, Ant, Devin Booker, I mean, these guys are far more popular and established. So him making the All-Star team is still tricky. I know you're thinking of the world format, and they got to fill out that world team because they want to promote the Euro League and you want to continue to push certain players out the NBA. Yeah, we get the whole propaganda. But my mind, I'm still thinking of the old format. He probably still wouldn't make it, especially with the media's push to make it seem like Nikola Jokic is just a one-man army in Denver. And that's not really been the case when they've won. Because when anybody else is getting these numbers and they like the sixth, seventh, eighth seed, you know, it's called stat pattern. And shout out to Russell Westbrook, 500 triple doubles. Nobody catching that. I mean, maybe, but it's going to be a long time before it happens. So shout out to him. But Jamal Murray, he just going to be Jamal Murray, all-star game or not.
Absolutely, but it's been impressive to see his start to the season because this is a guy that's typically had to play his way into shape. No one questions his body of work in the playoffs, but I do believe it would be a cool thing to see him finally get his first All-Star nod with the way that he's playing right now. And I think he has a strong case, even though he still has an uphill battle. No question about it. But the reason why I think he has a strong case, Devin Booker is currently out of action right now. Stephen Curry has been in and out of the lineup due to injury. Jamal Murray has stayed relatively healthy. And I see a lot of people that I know personally that have media credentials talking about how the NBA has an injury problem. And every night they turn on the TV and they see guys that are in and out of the lineup. And you know what that does? That opens up an opportunity for certain guys to get considered for certain honors in the NBA. Jamal Murray is one of those guys that is taking advantage of that this season, in my opinion. And even though he's a known commodity, I think this is a year where maybe some of the critics of the league, when it comes to the injuries, need to start watching some games a little bit more and pay attention to what Jamal Murray is doing right now. Because, like you said, it's a lot of people who think Nikola Jokic doesn't have help. He has every bit of that with number 27.
Jamal Murray or De'Aaron Fox? Who you giving your all-star vote to?
Right now, as of today, I'm giving it to Jamal.
After just telling us how De'Aaron Fox carried the
Still,
Spurs during the stretch without two of their other best players,
I get
putting
it.
up similar, not if not better numbers outside of a 50-point performance,
I understand.
you want to give Jamal this because of sentimental reasons, because he ain't get his shot. That's what you're telling me?
No, not at all. No.
Not
It's not sentimental. It's not sentimental.
you feel like he's
I
been a
think
more
the new
deserving
format,
player?
I do. I really
Okay,
do. And
yeah.
I think the format benefits him. I honestly do. If it was the East
Oh,
versus West,
forget the
still.
format. Just your opinion.
I do. Yes.
Okay.
I believe Jamal Murray has been more of an all-star worthy candidate this year than De'Aaron Fox. No disrespect to De'Aaron Fox. He's had a hell of a run. But as of today, that's who I would go with. We spoke about a few of the major headlines surrounding the week that was. Let's get into a story that broke in the immediate hours following the last time we recorded. And at a time most stateside were asleep once the news dropped, surrounded a 12-time All-Star point guard, Chris Paul, who, after announcing on social media that this season would be his final year and that he planned on retiring after 21 seasons in the league prior to the Thanksgiving holidays, was sent home by the LA Clippers in the middle of a 5-game road trip out in Atlanta, as the franchise whose uniform he donned for a significant chunk of his career issued a statement stating that Paul is no longer a member of the team and will work with him on the next step of his career. To move on from Paul, the Clippers would have to waive him and pay out his $3.6 million salary, agree to a buyout, or look to trade him come December 15th, when free agents who signed this past offseason are eligible to be traded. When the Clippers first re-signed Chris Paul during this summer, there was a part of me that always wondered how certain guys on that team felt about that. In particular, one that he had a history of playing beside and got to a conference finals with in Houston, a guy that I know very well in James Harden. But I sought to overlook it because I felt like at this stage of their career, both of them probably needed one another. We know that James Harden was carrying a mighty load offensively for that Clippers team, still is. And one of the biggest issues that they had throughout the playoffs and over the course of last year in the regular season was a backup point guard. What I didn't realize, but I came to realize watching this situation, is how perception has a lot to do with how people receive information and things. Torrance and I have had a lot of conversations over the years about Chris Paul. Torrance is someone that likes to refer to Chris Paul as a company man. I understand why he refers to him as such, because Chris Paul, to put it bluntly, is no dummy. He knows how to use the media to his advantage. And I truly believe when he announced that he was retiring, something that he hinted at months prior to even announcing this to give us the indication that this was coming, he was doing this to get ahead of something. We know what that something is now. I think it's unfortunate that it had to end this way, but when you're no longer at the peak of your prowess as a player in the league, and you start to draw DMPs, and certain people don't know how to receive or take your leadership a certain way, this is what happened. And when you have players going above coaches that spend hours on top of hours game planning, telling a player to go against what that coach is telling them, and it don't work, well, that's your ass. It's that simple. I never thought that it would come to an end this way, but am I surprised? No, not one bit, because everybody can't take Chris Paul's honesty. And you've even heard some famous analysts, well-known people in the league, say that even they know Chris Paul is no saint. And me and Torrance are no stranger to having conversations about Chris Paul's demeanor. We know that there are former teammates that have moved on from the NBA world, but still comment on things that have let their opinions and takes be known on how he was in dealing with him in an NBA locker room.
Hey man, the words you were struggling to say was politics. Politician. That's Chris Paul. He's one to the 10th degree. He's also an asshole. And see, the thing about being one of those, it's a certain skill to that. One of those skills is like knowing your place in the moment. If all of these guys were in the prime of their careers, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Chris Paul, guess who would be the odd man out? It'll be Chris Paul. They can only acquiesce to about two guys' max demands. And then you got a former champion coach as well, so he gonna have his sway. We can't have a fourth guy feeling like he got an opinion. That's just too disruptive to the team. It's just too disruptive. Chris has had this reputation for a lot of years, but he's also had it on the bad side. Hey, he going behind guys' back talking to coaches about guys. He going to the front office. And maybe other star players did it, but it was something that was made known about him. That's not even to get into the crazy Kanye tweet about his character. Chris Paul is an interesting figure. You want to feel sympathy because, hey, this is his last year. He's supposed to be retiring, but no one owes anyone a retirement tour. That's really for the select few, a very select few. In the words of Draymond Green, look, they don't even love you like that for real. They respect you, but love? Me and Gabe talked about it. This Chris Paul retirement tour was very quiet. Really wasn't seeming like it was something that was being tracked. Yeah, the announcement was made, the game in Charlotte happened, and then it went radio silent. Maybe Chris Paul doesn't understand that to most people, he's already been retired for the last 2 to 3 seasons when you talk about stops in Golden State and San Antonio. So, yeah, it sucks they won like this, but it's the Clippers. I mean, I've been only telling y'all for the past 42 episodes that this is a very unserious organization, that they need to move or change the name, do something. But as long as they're the Los Angeles Clippers, illogical things will continue to happen.
Do you know how bad a situation has to be, regardless if it's the Clippers or any organization?
There's
Please,
no
please don't.
regardless if it's the Clippers.
Just hear me out. Do you know how bad a fucking situation has to be when an organization whose uniform you put on, who had plans of retiring your number, has to get rid of you because of you not accepting the role that has been granted unto you? Like, it's only so much they're gonna put up with. And it don't even have to do necessarily with the pecking order. It's where you are at this stage of your career. You're in your 21st season. You're 40 years of age. You aren't able to blow by or separate from defenders at the level that you did in the prime of your career. And you're sitting up here undermining coaches. And this is the thing about Chris Paul, too. And I noticed just watching him. He the type of person that when he right, he ain't gonna never let you live that down. But even when you right, sometimes you wrong. And in this situation, he was wrong. You going over the line with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy, one of the more respected coaches in the league. This dude was an architect of the top five defense. Of course, you only as great as your personnel as a coach, right? Any great coach will tell you that. But when a coach is telling a young player to run a scheme and you tell him to undermine that and he undermine that and then he get burnt, that don't only just make that young player look bad, that make you look bad. And when coaches know that you're going behind closed doors in a locker room or private channels telling guys to go against the grain and we struggling, come on now.
This is the same Clippers organization that Chris Paul once played for. Now, he arrived, I believe, during the Sterling era.
He did.
Chris Paul was doing the same shit then. The pecking order was just different. It was him and Blake. And even that was an issue between those two because Blake was supposed to be the undisputed face leader of the Clippers, but Chris Paul got to walk in the room and make sure he get his respect. One way or another. People just be tired of dude. You ain't got no value no more, Playboy. Go on. You got a family. You made a lot of money. OKC may retire your jersey. The Hornets may retire. You know, the Pelicans. Whatever team you play for, you know, Hornets, Pelicans, somewhere in New Orleans, put his jersey up. It don't matter if the Clippers hang it up. Look how they treated Blake Griffin. A very unserious organization. We're like, you shouldn't expect much. Chris Paul has been a great career. You pissed a lot of people off. You rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. But all in all, people still respect you. It may not be a retirement tour-worthy career, but the respect will always be there. That's the point guard at the end of the day. No matter what ring jokes we want to make, we want to talk about him being an asshole. Hey, when Chris Paul stepped into the building, you won. Plain and simple. You're no longer that guy, and they're not looking to you to be that guy. The other two guys want you to shut up. You didn't want to shut up. The coach wanted you to shut up. You don't want to shut up. You got to go home, bro. I'm 40 years old, too. I get irritated, too. I understand where he's coming from. I want Chris Paul to come to the Bulls. See, we need that type of discipline. Get some stuff right. Get some order around here. I wouldn't mind it because Billy don't want to say nothing.
Man, that's another story for another day. But you know what? I wouldn't mind that in Chicago if he was to come here and wanted to end his career here. I doubt that happens. I got nothing but love for Chris Paul, second all time on the assist leaderboard, second all time on the steals leaderboard. Elevated a lot of franchises out of fucked up situations, dealt with a lot of things, deserves a lot of credit for that. Like, it seemed like every time Chris Paul was on a team, a franchise was up for sale, whether that was the Clippers, whether that was the Rockets, whether that was the Suns. He's always helped teams supersede their expectations in my book. And he was asked to resurrect some franchises and did so with great success. But it's only so much that coaches and teams can take. I'm not saying that the Clippers are all scot-free, but I think they knew when this news dropped that it was going to look bad regardless. But Chris Paul, in my opinion, did not do himself any favor. And that's something that I think you and me do agree on.
The Clippers don't care about good news, bad news. They know nobody take them serious, man. That's you.
Moving away from the Chris Paul and LA Clippers saga to talk about a team that a year ago this time was sitting atop of the East with a 21-4 record through the first quarter of the season after winning the first 15 contests in dominant fashion. Yet, in spite of capturing one of their best wins of the year this past week against the Spurs, enters week 8 lying among the play-in portion of the conference standings in the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are currently in 8th place in the East as we record this with a 14-11 record. And even though they rank among the top 10 in both offensive and defensive rating, suffered losses against the Portland Trail Blazers and Golden State Warriors, who were without Stephen Curry, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green to close out their recent 3-game homestand. Fortunately for the Cavs, they have a stretch of games coming up where they'll face some teams that are below them in the standings, such as the Wizards, Hornets, and Bulls twice respectively, and the Pelicans days prior to their Christmas Day tilt with the Knicks out at MSG in New York. Look, I already know what Torrance is going to say about what's led to the Cavaliers' most recent struggles. I'm not going to say that he's necessarily wrong, but when I look at it from a collective standpoint, I'll say this. Guys aren't playing with any flow offensively. I don't see the ball moving at the level in which it needs to. I don't know if that has to do with the amount of injuries, guys being in and out of the lineup, whether that's Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell on some nights, Jared Allen, but they got to get that rectified. I know that the increase in the pace of play has brought about problems for them defensively, but that's no excuse for this team, or it should not be. However, not all hope is necessarily lost, because if you look at some of the last several teams to make it to the finals, they all got off to rough starts, such as the 23 Nuggets, the 23 Heat, last year's Pacers squad, even the Mavs in 2024. They have time to rectify it. And fortunately for them, they're going to face some teams where they might be able to recoup some ground a little bit. But they shouldn't be seeking to take any of these opponents lightly. And they got to play with more urgency. They have not been fast enough. They haven't even had the endurance to finish most of these games. And they got to find a way to just adjust to the game. And with the way that teams are coming after them as well, you can't let your offense impact your defense. And you got to find a way to get back on defense. And in my opinion, that's where the Cavs have to start to regain the form that they once had a season ago, is on the defensive end. And guys got to utilize that to turn that into some offense.
Yeah, I just came back. I just walked away for a minute because I noticed Gabe wasn't getting straight to it. But shout out to bro for his great analysis. Evan Mobley, bro, I tried to find a middle name on you today, boy. I was gonna just spell it all out, man. It's you, dog. And for anybody that know Evan, if it's Evan himself listening, I think you're a great basketball player. I don't hate you. You know, before we get to hate, we must start with love first. So let's get that established. I want you on the 2028 Olympic team. I think you're very important to this country's basketball future. Now, with all that being said, it's you, big dog. You holding this whole situation back, man. Look, Shaq told Donovan Mitchell he doesn't think he's the guy. And that's not always a knock. It takes a very special superstar, especially from the perimeter, to be the man on an NBA championship team. It takes a lot of talent around that guy. I believe that at some point last season, Donovan Mitchell felt like you were headed in the right direction in that regard. He shouldn't have to go out and get 30 and 40 so often because you're supposed to be the guy that's doing it. You have a career high in field goal attempts this year. Only two more, but nonetheless a career high. But yet you're shooting a career low field goal percentage. You're shooting 4 3-pointers a game, but you have a career low in free throw percentage. You got a career high in assists per game at 4. You doing everything that they don't need you to do for real. They need you to be aggressive at the rim, drawing fouls, getting to the free throw line, trying to get 25, 28 points a game. You've never averaged 20. You've never averaged 10 rebounds. You've never even averaged 2 blocks per game. This is somebody who they compare to Anthony Davis and Kevin Garnett. And when you see him move physically, you can see how someone could be led to those conclusions. But he doesn't have the motor that those two guys possess. Now, maybe that's just something that is just is what it is, or maybe somebody has to light that fire under him. But until that fire arrives, this Cleveland Cavaliers team won't be going anywhere. I see no reason that Karl Anthony Towns can't come to Cleveland and do whatever he wants against Evan Mobley. I know Giannis will. Right now, Jalen Duren look like he will as well. You don't put fear in anybody, not from your talent standpoint or physically. Jared Allen, he's a good guy. He plays his role. I can't knock him for it. Every team in the league would still like to take Jared Allen as is. But you, considering what they would have to pay you and the expectations, there would be teams that'll pass on you because you seem to not just have it. That's the problem with this Cavs team.
And you know what? To add to your point, with the way in which he's playing right now, if the Cleveland Cavaliers wanted to trade him, I don't think it would be the easiest thing to do, especially when you consider the team's cap situation and his contract of $46 million or more over the next 5 years. And when you look at the way that he's playing right now, you could make a case for Cleveland if you wanted to, moving him in the quest to try and find a superstar caliber player, because he hasn't taken that jump that many people expected. And even though I always had questions personally about the AD and KG comps, I could understand it on some levels when watching him as a freshman at USC along the way towards guiding the Trojans to an Elite Eight appearance. And I thought he could build off of that. And I thought that 20 to 25 and 10 should have been the goal for him going into year number five out in the land. He hasn't reached that. And yeah, he is a big factor in a piece of their success. And when you see Donovan Mitchell out here having to get 30, which he shouldn't have to do, of course, these conversations are going to come up. And that's why I wanted to give you the floor to talk about Evan Mobley and why his performance thus far to start the season has been glaring and played a role as to why this team hasn't been able to be as dominant as they were a season ago. Of course, injuries do play a part in that, but Evan Mobley, when he's out there, he does have to do something to make his presence felt in order to help this Cavalier squad get to where they aspire to get to, and that's beyond the second round for once and for all, and at least to a conference final. Not all hope is lost. But yeah, number four definitely has to step up. And when you put what Torrence said together with the points that I was trying to make when opening the segment, I think that's what's going to have to happen in order for Cleveland to get right. And as the world turns along the Eastern Conference carousel, let's keep things within the Central Division, going from Cleveland out to Milwaukee to talk about the man known to the world as Giannis. Well, we heard esteemed reporter Brian Windhorst stating to ESPN Cleveland that the Bucks superstar asked to be moved over the summer in the wake of Giannis's social media activity, where he removed all of his posts related to his career with the franchise outside of celebrating his NBA championship in 2021, an NBA Cup title from a season ago. Bucks entered the week sitting in the 10th and final play-in spot in the East, having lost 8 out of their last 10 games, and will be without the 9-time All-Star for the next 4 weeks after suffering a strained right calf last week, an injury that comes fresh off Giannis missing 4 games last month after exiting Milwaukee's contest against Cleveland with a left adductor strain. Bucks have posted a 1-7 record as of this recording, and in 8 games, their two-time MVP has been out of action. Look, unless if I hear it directly from the main man over at the worldwide leader that Giannis Antetokounmpo has requested a trade, I'm not buying it. I don't make much of him wanting to clean out his social media. I think he's frustrated with the way things have gone in his absence. They got off to a nice start. Ryan Rollins was playing some great basketball in the absence of Kevin Porter, who's back. They look like a team that, through the first couple weeks of the season, could at least be within the top five of the East standings. They just got to go out there and make a move, man, at the deadline. And I think the opportunity is going to present itself for them to make a few moves. I don't see Giannis going anywhere as of right now in the middle of the season, especially with the way that his health has been. I haven't heard him say anything about it. I'm pretty sure that New York would have been an enticing destination. I'm not going to take that away from him or anybody that wants to report that aspect of it, but Until I see that notification from who I need to see it from, I'm not buying it. I know the media been trying to run Giannis out of Milwaukee for a long time. Doc Rivers is even going on Front Street in front of the media talking about it. If I'm the Bucks, I'm trying to plot out a move to figure out how can we continue to pull ourselves up out this hole that we're currently in and get back into that top six or five with an ease.
Look, Giannis a hypocrite. And I think that's how we know he's fully American at this point. Well, he's playing a lot of American basketball player behavior that he once criticized. Giannis said he didn't need to team up with nobody. Giannis wanted to be the humble guy at first. Now we see him flexing, talking shit. And he always tried to pretend like, oh, I'm never leaving Milwaukee. I don't want to be a distraction to the organization. Oh, man, he didn't pull it out. Every playbook, when it comes to trying to get your team to one, either trade you or trade for pieces. He was doing streams this summer, randomly talking about taxes in Florida and Texas. Now he comes back. I'm tired of losing. I've never been on a 7-game losing streak. The whole my family moved to Greece, but they didn't move to Greece thing this summer. I love New York. Luka wants to play with me in LA. Now you got Rich Paul out here on his show saying, hey, the Bucks should look at my guy, Jalen Johnson, for Giannis. That's an interesting deal. Whether it is or not, and we hinted at the Austin Reeves thing. We hinted at the Devin Vassell thing. Giannis' situation is so funny. He had the calf injury. I promise you, I thought for my second. I'm like, is this even real? Like, honestly, like, did he just decide he's just not hooping for this team no more? Because he out, what, 2 to 4 weeks, apparently. I'm not paying this Giannis thing no more attention until the offseason or until some real significant trade news come up. Giannis playing games, the organization playing games, and I think everybody knows the best deal can't be made during the season for Giannis unless somebody else is going to trade somebody significant for him.
I see what the fuck Rich Paul doing. He trying to send Jalen Johnson back home to Wisconsin. For those who don't know, Jalen Johnson is a native of the Badger State and had a well-decorated career out there. That's what he's trying to do. And I
But that's a
get
good move. It's a good basketball move.
I'm not down it. Oh, if I'm the Bucks and Atlanta wants to make that trade, go right ahead. However, if I'm Atlanta and we talked about Jalen Johnson last week, and me and you have talked about Jalen Johnson trades off and on over the last couple of months off the record. I'm holding on to Jalen Johnson. If I'm Anzi Sala and Kyle Korver in that front office, I'm holding on to Jalen Johnson. But when it comes to Giannis, it's a lot. And he's definitely done some things that have been funny to see in the light, but I'm not really paying too much attention to it. And I do agree with you when you say if you're Milwaukee, you're better off getting a better deal for him in the summer than you are right now. You really are. Unless if it's going to be some three-team trade where a team is able to offer you some picks or whatever that are valuable that you can make some moves with. Don't worry about that right now. You got to let this year play out if you're Milwaukee. I think you have too much invested into it. And if anything, might want to invest a little bit more into it. As we talk about the situation with Giannis just now, you all know this month marks the final month in 2025. And in just a couple of weeks on December 15th, free agents who signed during the offseason will now be eligible to be traded, leaving room for many to speculate exactly which players could be on the move in the quest to help teams potentially vie for a championship months from now. Welcome to the Trading Places segment, where each week throughout the month of December on the new 24, me and Torrance will take a moment to examine a pair of star talents and assess the given teams that will make for the best fits for the following players who could be on the move sooner rather than later. Last week, we examined which places would make for the best landing spots for all-star power forward Anthony Davis, as well as shooting guard Zach LaVine. And in this week's edition, we're going to start off with another all-star whose NBA career started out in the city we hail from, but managed to take off shortly after he left and went to his third pit stop where he currently is, and that's Lauri Markkanen of the Utah Jazz, who is currently on the books for $46.3 million and has 3 more years left on his deal following the conclusion of this season that will escalate up to $49.8 million and $53.5 million on the final 2 seasons of his contract, as he won't hit the open market until the summer of 2029. 28-year-old is currently in his ninth season in the league, posting career-best numbers in points per game, averaging 7 rebounds a game while shooting 47% from the floor. After only playing in a limited amount of games following his lone All-Star year and his inaugural campaign in Salt Lake City, We know the Jazz are in the midst of a rebuild, and that it's been said Utah wants to continue with Markkanen in the fold. It's no guarantee that Markkanen gets moved, but if he does, I think we can be rest assured in knowing that it had to do with Danny Ainge getting a haul for him that he always desired all along. If Lauri Markkanen were to get traded prior to the deadline, which places do you believe would make for the most ideal landing spots for him?
Yeah, I only got two. The San Antonio Spurs, I think, would be an ideal fit. You put him next to Wemby. Wemby's out. You put him next to Luke Kornet. Play stretch four. They have a lot of great defenders around him to kind of cover up for some of his defensive deficiencies. And I think they could use another scorer, especially somebody with some size who plays pretty much perimeter basketball. Ideally, I would have liked to see a wing. That's why I was really high on them taking Ace Bailey at one point during the draft. Dylan Harper thing has definitely worked out a lot for them. And the other team, the Boston Celtics. Why not put him in pretty much the Porzingis role? But you keep the center, you play him at the four, you got JT, JB, and you figure out which guards you're going to keep. I'm sure you'd have to give up Anthony Simons or Derek White in such a deal, but I think that it'll be beneficial to the Boston Celtics if they felt like they needed to make a move and if Danny didn't try to beat them over the head, which would be an interesting trade because it is the Celtics. I mean, Kevin McHale once did him a favor, so who's to say he wouldn't do the same for the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, that would be kind of a full circle moment for Danny Ainge to have to go back to where his NBA career once started to get a deal done. I didn't think about Boston being a potential spot for him. I like the Spurs. I could see that when they got the young core and they got the assets to make a big splash. His skills could definitely fit well with their team. Definitely could use some more shooting, as we talked about off and on over the last several months. Lauri Markkanen could provide that. I name another team for you, the Golden State Warriors. This is a team that struggles immensely with size. You put him in there with his shooting and ability to space and stretch out the floor. He could prove to fit rather seamlessly into their system, providing them with some versatility in the front court. I think they still would need a five. Definitely wouldn't solve that problem, but we know that they're going to need another guy. And they got a piece in Kuminga, who they haven't been playing lately, who they could potentially put in a deal for Lauri Markkanen and throw in some picks. I could see that one. And the Portland Trail Blazers. You got Donovan Clingan in the middle. You got Denny Avdija, who's been playing phenomenal basketball to begin the year. You get that front court right, and you got some pieces that you could seek to flip over there. Young guys, they could go in a myriad of directions, maybe even ship off a Jeremy Grant to get a guy like Lauri Markkanen. Do I think that puts them over the top? Not necessarily, but it could give them something that's strong enough to make a deeper push in that play-in race out in the Western Conference. I know a lot of people have been saying Detroit and that pairing Markkanen with Cunningham over there would create a lethal offensive pairing, as he could be that stretch four wing piece to complement K as a playmaker. But I don't think he fits in over there. That's just my personal opinion. I like the toughness that they trying to play with and the physicality. Lauri not one of them guys that like to bang. I think they could work without Lauri Markkanen. But the three teams that I see is Golden State, Portland Trail Blazers, Spurs, wild card team, Miami Heat. That's another team that might be able to use a stretch four over there. And they got a couple pieces maybe that they could flip, such as a Jaime Jaquez or even a Khalil Ware, if they're not impressed, even though I personally wouldn't move Khalil Ware. That's another option. We talked about Markkanen and the places that could be ideal for him in the event he gets dealt. Well, what about a guy who is more than likely getting traded before him and led the league in rebounds per game for the last three seasons? And Domantas Sabonis of the Sacramento Kings, three-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA selection, who's under contract for $42.3 million this season, has 2 more years left on his deal following this season, as he won't hit the market until the summer of 2028. Recently suffered a partially torn meniscus in his left knee a few weeks ago, and is going to be evaluated prior to the start of the new year, according to reports. Was averaging double-double numbers through the first 11 games of the year. Currently in the midst of his 11th season in the NBA, as Sabonis is set to turn 30 years old this upcoming May. Which potential destinations do you think may make for the most optimal fits for the son of the great Arvydas Sabonis, to go to in the event Sacramento moves him at the deadline.
Lowry wasn't a fit in Detroit. I feel like this might be the place for Sabonis. Put him at the four. You got Jalen Duren. You got Isaiah Stewart. You got Paul Reed to back him up on the front line. Now we ain't got to worry about somebody picking on him with no consequences in the postseason. You get a pick and roll partner for K, somebody else that can facilitate the offense without K in the game as well. And like I said, they got the size to cover up for the size issues with playing him at the center that Sacramento had done for a number of years. And secondly, I'm gonna just say the Chicago Bulls. Because why not? Because this is the Chicago Bulls move to make. And you all need to see what it looks like for your team to continue to make parallel deal after parallel deal. Parallel meaning nothing that's going to make us better or worse. So Sabonis is not a big fan of his game and his fit for most teams. That's all I got for him. Honestly, he could stay in Sacramento and I'm fine with that.
Sabonis has an interesting marketplace, in my opinion. I don't think a lot of teams would really want to take him on because of that contract. However, if it's one team that I think would make for a great fit for Domantas Sabonis, it's the Washington Wizards. They have a young core with Alex Sarr, Keyshawn George, and Bilal Coulibaly.
Trey
And I
Johnson.
think. And Trey Johnson, of course, yeah, not knocking Trey Johnson, but I know he's been in and out due to injury, but that's definitely a guy that I know Will Dawkins is very high on, and we expect to play a big part in their immediate future. I think pairing Sarr next to Sabonis could unlock both of them in ways that would be helpful. Alex Sarr could be that backline defender that Sabonis need when he's getting beat defensively. And then Sabonis can provide that level of playmaker and shooting from the floor that Sarr has oftentimes struggled with. Now, we've seen Alex Sarr have some impressive outings in the early days of the season, but I always think back to our conversation we had on the Wizards in 30 teams in 24 days. At some point, Will Dawkins is going to have to pay somebody. And maybe adding a veteran of Sabonis's caliber can help the Wizards to enhance their profile and eventually become a solid team within the next couple years. Because even though they bad right now, they've been competitive in some games. They just need somebody to help them close out some games. They got to get a guy, and he may not be the ultimate, but if you get another top five pick, which they more than likely will in a loaded draft class, and you add a wing beside what they got with Sabonis and Sarr in the front court, if they were to get Sabonis, that could be a nice thing to have out there in the nation's capital. And then another team I think could be a decent fit for Domantas Sabonis is the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets got to improve, and I think his fundamentally sound acumen on a roster alongside of Ryan Kalkbrenner could be very beneficial. And that's a team that wants to make a push toward respectability as well. You know, they had the longest playoff drought in the East, and even though things are bleak right now, I think pairing him with LaMelo Ball will provide them with two exceptional playmakers. That's a possibility as well. And then I'm gonna say Golden State just because of what I said earlier for Lauri Markkanen. We know the Warriors gonna try and make a move. Do I see them as a championship contender? No, I do not. But I do know that they're gonna try and make a move. I wouldn't expect anything less from Mike Dunleavy Jr. in that front office. The Bulls go without saying, it's connections there. We know that Arturis Karnasovas is tight with his father, Arvidas. But like you said, it'd be the same old thing, just a different day. I wouldn't personally be with that, but could I see it happening? Yeah, I probably could.
Somebody gonna end up on the Brooklyn Nets. That's what's gonna happen with one of these two guys. Gonna be just a random trade to the Brooklyn Nets. Watch.
I'm glad you brought them up because that's another team you can't count out for Domantas Sabonis. Because that's another team that gotta pay somebody with all that money that they got over there. But moving away from the talk on a pair of international talents who could be departing from their current markets to head out to new destinations in the coming weeks. To discuss the action that's set to resume this week for the NBA Cup, as this year's knockout round will not feature the Milwaukee Bucks for the first time ever in the event's history. However, it will grant us the opportunity to see a few teams with championship hopes facing off against squads that have found a way to take some around the league by surprise, including another squad that is no stranger to the event after advancing to the championship game in Cup play a season ago. Starting with a pair of Southeast Division rivals that will be battling it out for the supremacy of the Sunshine State, with a team that clinched a wild card spot in the East in the Miami Heat, will face Group B winner and the top-seeded Orlando Magic in a quarterfinal round, followed by the battle between a pair of clubs that ironically made a blockbuster trade with one another this time of year 2 years ago, is the East Group C winning Knicks will head out to the sixth to take on the Raptors after capturing Group A prior to getting the matchups that will help determine which teams will represent the West in this year's NBA Cup, as we will see the wild card representative in that conference in the Suns face last year's Cup runner-up and Group A winner in the Oklahoma City Thunder in a rematch of the group play finale between the two squads that OKC won a couple weeks ago. And last but not least, a matchup that could bring about the return of Victor Wembanyama as the West Group C winner in the San Antonio Spurs march out to the City of Angels to take on Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and the West Group B winning Los Angeles Lakers, who have a chance to capture their second NBA Cup title after capturing the first one just 2 years ago during the event's inception. Out of all these games, the one that I'm looking forward to watching the most might come to some people's surprise, and that's the Phoenix Suns against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I know the Phoenix Suns are without Devin Booker, but Dylan Brooks has got that team believing. Colin Gillespie had an incredible performance in the final frame to deliver Phoenix a win against the Minnesota Timberwolves. We saw Mark Williams drop 22 and 7, holding his own against one of the league's best and Rudy Gobert. It seems like no matter who's in the lineup for that team, they never quit and they always in a game. And Oklahoma City is riding high on a big winning streak, believe they're just the third team in league history to start a season where they've won 23 out of their first 24 games. That's one of those games where you never know. I'm going with Oklahoma City. Don't get it twisted, but I think that's going to be an exciting game to watch, and it would not surprise me if the Phoenix Suns, even without Devin Booker, could go into OKC and get a win. It really would not, because the Suns are one of those teams that, hey, you just can't count out. And then on the East side, I'm looking at Knicks and Raptors. And the reason why I'm looking at that game is because New York has struggled immensely on the road. They're going into Toronto, one of the league's raucous home environments. Raptors been struggling a lot lately since RJ Barrett has been out, been a big part of their offense. Can they right the ship? It would be cool to see them use this and ignite them to potentially what could be a playoff run. Those are the two games I'm looking forward to. And I think all four games are going to be very fun and interesting to watch if you're a true basketball fan.
Yeah, I'm gonna go right to it. I got Miami beating Orlando. I got the Raptors beating the Knicks. I got OKC winning. And the only problem I had was that Lakers Spurs game. Because they part of me is like, man, would the Lakers duck that OKC smoke after what happened to start the year? Like, are they ready to like really walk down that path again and play them, especially in a meaningful game this early in the season? I'm gonna go with the Spurs to beat the Lakers. I'm not all the way sure about it, but I'm gonna go Spurs. And after that, I got Toronto OKC in the finals, and I got OKC winning the whole thing.
I got the Magic over the Heat, even in spite of the loss of Franz Wagner. I think that's going to be a tough game. Always is. Those
Well,
games
Paolo
usually are
need to
decided
step
by
up.
5 points or less. You right. He does need to step up. You right. And this is his time to do it. You know, Franz hold the fort down for an extensive period of time. Paolo got to do the same this time around. He got to have big game. Anthony Black, who I've said has been an X factor for Orlando, he's been playing some great basketball. Hopefully he can keep it up, Desmond Bane. I'm going to give them the edge at home. They were on this stage a season ago where they fell short against the Milwaukee Bucks in a quarterfinal round. Jalen Suggs been playing well. Status of Tyler Hero in that game is to be determined as we recording that on the eve of that game going down. But I got the Magic and Knicks Raptors. I got Toronto and out in the West. Like I said, I got Oklahoma City over Phoenix. And I'm going to go with the Spurs over the Lakers. I'm gonna go with the Spurs. I really want to see that Spurs Thunder matchup. If we get it, we talking about three games that we're gonna see between these squads in the month of December. Is those two teams will play out in San Antonio 2 days prior to that big showdown out in OKC on the 25th. And in the semifinals, I'm gonna go OKC over San Antonio. And I'm gonna take Orlando over Toronto. I'm gonna take Orlando over Toronto, and when it's all said and done, I got the Thunder beating the Magic for NBA Cup supremacy. I feel like this is the year that they get that title after falling short a year ago. Although they're gonna have to do it without Isaiah Hartenstein and potentially Lu Dort, who have both been out due to injury. But even in spite of their starting five not playing a single minute together, they ain't missed a beat.
The Knicks better figure out a way to get there, man. It's hard to fill up them seats in Vegas that fast, but I know them Knicks fans will show up just to win something. Just to win something. Can you just do everybody this solid? Or just this one time?
It would be cool to see if they could get there. You know they fans travel well, but remains to be seen. They had a shot last year on their home court. Now they got to go behind enemy lines and see if they could get one. You won't find too many nights this week where there are more than four games going on outside of Friday, when 14 out of 30 NBA teams will be in action. However, you'll get the chance to see what all unfolds during the knockout round of the NBA Cup, as we just discussed. We got the Suns and Thunder duking it out in the quarterfinals on the Western Conference side, with a trip to Vegas on the line at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central, out on OKC on Amazon Prime, followed by Spurs and Lakers set to take place in LA shortly after that game concludes. Then we'll get an NBA TV doubleheader intertwined within this time as well on Friday, with the Hawks and Pistons facing off against one another out in the Motor City at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, prior to getting that rematch between a pair of teams that faced one another in the playoffs a season ago, as the Wolves head out to the Bay to face the Warriors in the nightcap before NBA Cup play resumes back up with semifinal outings in Vegas starting at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Central on Amazon Prime, as the winners of those respective matchups will face one another for the ultimate prize in the championship next Tuesday on December 16th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central on Amazon Prime, as well as all the NBA Cup games from this point forward will be featured on there. Games to watch, man. It's not too many. Of course, I'm going to be watching that Hawks and Pistons. Definitely got my eyes on that NBA Cup. But one set of games that I definitely be watching that will be going down the night before the NBA Cup is Peacock NBA Monday. You got the Pistons going into Boston to face the Celtics. And then you have the Rockets going into the Rocky Mountains to face off against the Nuggets. Those are two matchups that I definitely want to watch, and I think will be fun and a precious treat for basketball fans out there.
Yeah, me, I'm just watching the Cup games this week. I'm watching the Tuesday night, the Wednesday night, Saturday. Saturday should be great. I believe the Final Four is on Saturday.
It is both semifinal games.
That's the night right there. And shout out to John Cena too, last match that night in DC. So it's going to be a good sports night and entertainment for you folks out there who want to make the distinction. I'm just watching NBA Cup. That's where I got my mind focused, that if any of these games on the other nights, somebody's off to a great start, gets hot, maybe. But this week I'm focusing on the Cup games like the league should have made sure they did.
Yeah, it's hard not to focus on the Cup games this week. But one game in particular that I will add to that list that's going down on Friday night, 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central, Brooklyn at Dallas. Michael Porter Jr. has been on a tear, averaging over 30 in the month of December, has dropped 30 in every game or more. 35 against Charlotte, 33 against the Bulls, 35 against the Pelicans. I know those are bottom feeder teams. I know. Now, he'll be going up against one of the league's best defenses. I want to see how he fares in a matchup that I'm sure he's going to be drawing a few double teams. Should be an interesting treat, especially considering that this is a player that's going to be in a lot of trade rumors. Guy that you might hear us talk about soon. Stay tuned to that. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard throughout the first 42 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to the show, as we can't thank you enough for all of your support. Or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts on it directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and Twitter, known as X, at TNTF underscore, to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, where you can also check out our series, such as Faces of the League, recent episodes of Second Chance Points, and more at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay engaged with us to get the insights you need on all you want to know around the league, as we'll be back next week to talk on all that's transpired on the floor and more. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrence Stagger, thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe, and as always, peace.